You've been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today I want to talk about really several stories that have been in the news, especially the one I have some updates in, concerning the children, the illegal aliens that are entering the country, some details. But I want to put it in a much broader perspective. And I've been doing a lot of research and kind of refreshing my memory. When Barack Obama was running for president the first time, and really into the first year of his presidency, there was much discussion on Fox News in particular, the Glenn Beck show at least several times, of a strategy of the left. And that strategy has a name, and the name is the Cloward-Piven strategy. Now, these two individuals were professors at Columbia University, and we're talking in the 1960s, and they wrote an article for the May 2nd, 1960 issue of The Nation. Now, for those that are not familiar with The Nation, it is the oldest publishing magazine. I think it started in the 1860s. It published, I believe, weekly today. But it's always been a left-of-center magazine, and the two that usually come to mind are The Nation and The New Republic. And actually, at one time, these magazines, because of the publishing and magazines, have had problems. And declining readership, declining people subscribing to it. So they considered merging the two magazines. That never happened. They're still separate papers. But the editorial views have definitely shifted. My understanding is I don't read either one of them. I'm well aware that they're magazines of people that are on the left, and the left in the United States has changed to where today it's, especially for The Nation, but for many people in the Democratic Party, they're on the far left. They're not what I would consider a liberal in the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. Most of these people are far leftist. Many of them describe themselves as socialist, and when they're trying to hide that, they'll call themselves progressives. But they're not your typical moderate Democrat, or for that matter, what in the 60s was a liberal Democrat. They are definitely left of center and far left. That's where they are today. Now, these two professors published this article, and the thrust of the article, of the strategy, is to overload either the city or the state with people that could qualify for welfare. In other words, try to get as many people as possible to apply for welfare benefits. You got to keep in mind, starting in the 60s, under President Johnson, a Democrat, LBJ, we what started then was called the War on Poverty. Still going on. And I always alert to the fact, whenever you hear a politician, Democrat or Republican, describe something as a war on, what is it? It's an never-ending war. It never ends. And they don't want it to end because they want more and more and more and more government spending. You would think by now, with the tens of billions of dollars that have been spent on welfare and poverty, that poverty in the United States would be rare. It isn't. It isn't. It has slightly gone down, but we still have poverty. And we still have, and this is a reverse trend, we're having an increasing number of Americans being more and more dependent on the government. We're having government dependency, where an individual gets some form of benefit from the federal government. It could be food stamps. It could be a welfare check. It could be an earned income credit. It could be Section 8 housing. It could be various job programs. And there are many of them. So what happens is, instead of being self-reliant, instead of having a job, it almost pays you not to have a job. And that tends to be a intergenerational occurrence. In other words, the person never gets off welfare. They're always dependent in some form of assistance. And the problem is they might occasionally get a part-time job, even a full-time job, but they don't keep it. And part of the problem is they can do the math that, and this is a problem with the welfare programs, if you go get a job, you lose your benefits. And the difference between the job's pay and the benefits you get, and usually they're getting more than one, is not that much different, so they decide to stay home, watch TV, whatever. So what you're breeding in the United States is more and more government dependence, where people are permanently unemployed. Now, what the Cloward-Piven strategy was is to overload the welfare system by trying to organize individuals that may or may not be aware that they're entitled to welfare benefits to take advantage of them. And they did. And as a result, New York City went bankrupt. It was a conscious effort to do community organize to bring down and put a burden on the city of New York. Now, the strategy has applications to not just the city of New York, but any government entity, whether it's a city, county, or state, or the federal government. What I think we're seeing today is a president actually executing or implementing the Cloward-Piven strategy. Now, he's not going to come out and say that, folks, but I urge you to just think what's happened just recently. The most recent is the fact that we have today kind of a mini crisis on the U.S.-Mexican border, where children, primarily between 15 and 17, primarily teenagers, both male and female, but also young children, coming from largely Central America, namely El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, with some coming from Mexico and other countries in South America and Central America. But primarily the numbers are from those three countries that I named, namely El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. Because the word has gone out in those countries that President Obama is going to grant amnesty to young children or teenagers if they get to the United States. And they successfully cross the border and then move on to a city such as Dallas that is a sanctuary city. Now, there's a problem with that. It's not true, but that's not the point. That is what is being spread throughout Latin America and, to a lesser extent, Mexico. So you have today a massive, another invasion of, in this case, young children, and they are children. And some are, although most of them are teenagers, there are many that are below 10, for example. And they're coming to the United States thinking, well, if I get there, the government's going to take care of me. You see, ideas have consequences. So does presidential actions that do not enforce the current immigration laws. And that's what the president is not doing. He's not vigorously enforcing current immigration law. Now, I did not say he's totally not enforcing, because there is some enforcement. We do have our U.S. Border Patrol that has the primary responsibility, but not the only responsibility, to enforce immigration law. And they do a good job with the resources they have. The problem they have, though, is the political appointees that really get in the way of their own people doing their jobs and making it difficult for them to really send back illegal aliens to their countries of origin. Now, I went over this yesterday, and I'll bring up another point to this. We have a conscious strategy, and this is just one part of the Cloward-Piven strategy. Encourage illegal aliens to come to the United States. Now, the reason the Democratic Party wants this is very simple. It's to maintain power and keep power as long as they can. And one way to do that is to somewhat minimize the number of illegal aliens that are here. And the media, especially the three major networks, but also magazines such as Nation and the New Republic, and you also have some corporate newspapers such as the Wall Street Journal, are big advocates of open borders. In other words, encouraging illegal aliens to get to the United States either by flying in on a visa and then overstaying the visa, or, for example, crossing the U.S.-Mexican border and seeking work here. Because what happens is if an illegal alien can cross the border and get to a sanctuary city, and that's most of the cities in the United States, and most of the states for that matter. And the reason is the federal government has responsibility for enforcing immigration laws, and your local police and your state police simply aren't doing that. They don't have jurisdiction, so they largely do not enforce that law, those laws. Because the federal law is quite clear. If you enter here illegally, in other words, you don't present your papers and visa to designated inspection points. In other words, for example, you just cross the border. You don't go through customs and immigration. You're entering the United States illegally, and that's a misdemeanor. Now, people just don't come here to do that. Most of them are coming, not all of them, but most of them are coming to try to get a job. They're fleeing their country of origin, either because the economic opportunities are very limited, or another reason, especially from young people, is getting a lot of pressure from drug cartels, either to buy drugs or to sell drugs or become part of the gang. So you have legitimate reasons for not only children but adults to leave these countries, because they know if they can get to the United States and get a job, their standard of living will be significantly better. And to the extent that they have children, their children will be educated here, and they can also get free Medicare by going to emergency rooms, which they do all the time. So you have both political interest in the United States as well as corporate interest, largely from large companies that benefit from a cheap and compliant labor force, that are trying to get past, as we speak, comprehensive immigration reform to make it a lot easier for these people to work here. In other words, the first step is to get legal status. And once they have legal status, which means they can work here, it is only a matter of time and maybe a little money before they become citizens. Because the next step will be for the Democratic Party to push rather hard for these people to be granted citizenship. And what they do to try to minimize the extent of this is to repeat and repeat and repeat the big lie that the scope of the illegal alien problem is 11 million illegal aliens. They don't like you to call them that, but technically that is the appropriate term in the law. They want you to call them undocumented workers or undocumented immigrants. Undocumented means they didn't present their documents because they didn't have a visa to come here. They didn't have even a passport to come here. They just walk across the border or flew in. The ones that typically fly in do have visas and do have passports. The problem there is, and about half the problem is the fact that people overstay their visas. I'm not trying to say the entire illegal immigration or illegal alien problem is due to just people coming across the U.S.-Mexican border. It clearly is not. Both major parts of the problem need to be addressed, because it is a problem, because not all of these people are coming here to work, folks. The vast majority are. But you still have terrorists coming here, spies coming here, and probably in terms of numbers, criminals, primarily representatives of the various drug cartels going to literally every major city in the United States and setting up distribution channels and recruiting people into local gangs to distribute the drugs. And that invariably leads to crime problems, both shootings, murders, as well as the increased uses of drugs in the community. And you need to keep that in mind, because there are unintended consequences of throwing your borders open. And that is what the Democratic Party wants, and that's also what a significant number of Republicans want, because they get large campaign contributions from your large corporations, and not all of them are large. They're businesses that part of the model is to keep their labor costs down. They will hire and keep on the payroll illegal aliens that they know really don't have the legal status. Now, there are different ways they get around it, and the biggest way is they hire so-called employment agencies and put the burden on them to do the checking, but they're not really checking. They're going through the motions of telling the illegal alien to get fraudulent documents. In other words, in many cases, stolen identities and stolen Social Security numbers. Use that to get a job. So the agency has something in the file that says they can work here. I don't know if you've been to an employment interview lately, but one of the things they ask you for is your Texas driver's license and your Social Security card, and they want a copy of it. Now, the reason why they want that is to protect them, that we spent a minimum amount of time trying to establish that the person can work here. The problem is many of the documents that the illegal alien has, if you did the minimal amount of checking, you knew you would quickly find out that it's either a completely bogus driver's license, in other words, it's a forgery, or the Social Security number is for someone else, or it doesn't exist at all. So there are ways around the requirement that people have legal status. Now, I need to give you the big picture before I detail how the Cloward-Piven strategy in its many ramifications is working. Because I think, truly, President Obama is executing a Cloward-Piven strategy. He's never going to admit that. He's never going to even mention those words. And I seriously doubt anyone in the press is even going to ask them this. Because that strategy is a deliberate attempt to undermine government and place a terrific burden on government. Now, why do the Democrats do it? They want to be in power. And they know it's not 11 million. They know the real number is somewhere between 30 and 50 million and maybe even higher. And just to quickly review that, the Border Patrol, the U.S. Border Patrol, every day is out patrolling, and when they encounter what appears to be an illegal alien crossing into the United States, they try to capture them and detain them and arrest them. Now, usually, they're two people in a truck. They usually, my understanding is they don't work alone. There's a two-person team, and let's say they see someone breaking through a fence. It's usually not one person. It's a group. Most of the people that are crossing the border are doing it in groups, anywhere from half a dozen or a dozen or more people, because they pay what's called a coyote or guide to show them the best place to cross the border and then take them into the country and arrange for typically transportation to take them to a city or a place of employment in the country. And most of them get through. Not all of them, but a lot of them get through. In other words, they're not stopped, because the border is very long, and in many places, it's very rural. It's desert. It's a hostile environment. You really don't want to be there because you better have water and you better not get injured because you're not going to run into people except for the ranchers and farmers that are out there, and they're few and far between. So this is rather hostile or desolate country you're in. So if you can make it beyond the border, let's say 75 to 100 miles, then you have more or less a straight shot to get to where you're going. And you could arrange transportation, but you're going to have to walk. And most of these people walk at night because it assists them in evading the U.S. Border Patrol. So typically a two-unit patrol, namely in a truck or a SUV. It's a truck where they can put some of the people they capture in the back. Yeah, they could get maybe two or three people, but most of them will scatter in different directions. And that's what they're told to do by their guide or coyote. If they're ever stopped, think of it as a shooting star, run in all different directions because these Border Patrol can really, realistically, only capture a few of you. Now, sometimes they capture more, especially if they have more than one team. But the usual situation is they never get caught. And to the extent that some of them are, most of them get away. And the estimate is for every one that they apprehend or detain, anywhere from 3 to 5 of them get away. And until very recently, and there's a history of the numbers, and it varies from year to year, about 1 million, sometimes more, sometimes a little less, of people were getting detained along the entire U.S.-Mexican border. What that means is anywhere from 3 million to 5 million were getting away. And many of them, and most of them, made it to sanctuary cities like Dallas or Houston in Texas, where the immigration laws are not enforced. The police do not enforce it. So as a result, if they can get away from that border area and make it to a sanctuary city, then what they have to do is get those documents and get a job. And many, if most, do. But the key thing, the takeaway is, and this is every year, you're looking at conservatively 3 to 5 million illegal aliens coming into the country. And that has been going on for over 15 years. Now, the 3 to 5 million, do they all stay here? No. Usually, at least one goes home. Many times just to visit and then come back, but they go home. And most of them send money home to their families. So you need to keep that in mind. I'm not saying of all the ones that get here and work, they stay here forever. Many of them go home. They work here for one or more years. They send money back to Mexico or Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, or point south. And they can do that. And they do it. You can send telegrams. And that's done all the time. But conservatively, at least 3 to 4 of the 3 to 5 that get through stay. So what are we looking at? Typically, somewhere between 3 to 4 of the illegal aliens that make it to a job. In other words, they make it to a city all over the United States. It's not just in Texas or California or Arizona or New Mexico. It's not just along the border. It's every city, folks, every city. And many times they already know where they're going. And many times they have jobs waiting for them. It depends, again, who they pay to be their coyote. Now, what you need to also understand that most, I won't say all, but most of those coyotes or guides are part of a drug cartel. So think of it as a separate business line. This is human smuggling, illegal aliens into the United States. It's a big business because it's usually several thousand dollars that they charge the person. And many of them get ripped off. Many of them get assaulted. Many of them get raped because there's both men and women and young men and women. They take advantage of them and they abuse them. That's one of the problems, and it's a big problem. And sometimes they will abandon them. So you have people dying every day in the desert, in the Southwest, where either they did not keep up or were abandoned by their guides. They ran out of water. couldn't find water, and they died. And it's happening today across the Southwest. Not publicized, but bodies are found literally every day of people that might have died days ago, weeks, or months. Because keep in mind, many of these people are sick, they're young, they might not be fit, they might not have good nourishment from wherever they're coming from. So even the best circumstances, it's difficult walking and traveling in these desert areas that are very, very remote and far from civilization. And really, what the extent that you run into anybody, it's people that have these ranches. But those are few and far between. So you need to get that picture. Not everyone makes it to Dallas and gets a job in Dallas. Many of them, their money is ripped off. They never get across the border. Or if they get across the border, they can be ripped off there. They can just basically be dropped, and then they're on their own, and they may or may not make it. The couple of points I'm trying to make. These guides or coyotes are definitely connected to the drug cartels. And the human trafficking activities is coordinated with the drug cartels' efforts to get drugs smuggled into the United States. You see, both operations involve smuggling, one being narcotics, primarily marijuana, cocaine, heroin, smuggling it in to the United States. And they use mules, people that literally carry these drugs on their bodies. And that's usually a separate operation. Not always, but usually. Because what the drug cartels are doing, especially with the children, but also with the illegal aliens that they're smuggling, they know if the Border Patrol just has limited resources, even though they have some great technology in terms of cameras that have night vision, and they have sensors, they have trucks, they have helicopters, they have drones, they have fences. The problem is it's a very long border, and you have limited manpower, so you tend to focus it where the heavy traffic is in terms of individuals. So if they're trying to get drugs or people over, they use the humans as really decoys or distractions. And what they're doing now by flooding, if you will, flooding the Southwest in Texas, is think of it as flooding the zone with children. And what's happening is the U.S. Border Patrol has to process these children, and all that takes time. And when they're processing them, they're not patrolling. In other words, they're taking these children in their SUVs or vans to a detention center or a designated area to process them, to do the paperwork. And the drug cartels know this is happening. And that's the perfect time for them to use this period to smuggle drugs. You better believe this is happening, because it is. Because we're getting a massive amount of children from Central America and to a lesser extent Mexico, but primarily Central America, trying to get in the United States. To a certain extent, this is being coordinated and encouraged. And there's a rumor, there's always a rumor mill, word of mouth. And that's what's happening. And it's partially caused by President Barack Obama's making it easier for children of illegal aliens here to stay in the United States. Because the perception, I'm not saying the reality, but the perception is, as far as these children are concerned, if I can just get to the United States, they're going to take care of me. Eventually, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a meal. I'm going to get medical treatment. And I'm going to prosper. I'm going to live the American dream. Now, they don't express it in those terms. Now, what does this have to do? Well, let me summarize. Let's use the number for every one apprehended, only three. Actually get into the United States, work in the United States, and they don't go home. And assume for a moment it's about 1 million every year. That means 3 million every year for the last 15 years have been coming to the United States. That means there's not 11 million. 3 times 15 is 45 million. I don't know what the right number is. And I've said it before, it's only the government that really, if it wanted to, and I don't really think they want to because they don't want the number out, could determine with some precision and accuracy about, they could get a much narrower range. But it's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. 30 and 50 million. That's the scope of the existing problem. Now I think you can appreciate why the Democratic Party is pushing for comprehensive immigration reform, because they want these people to have first legal status and then a clear pathway to citizenship. Because once that happens, they're voters. And the Democratic Party rightly thinks at least 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 will become Democratic voters. That's what's in it for the Democratic Party. Do they really care about illegal aliens coming in? No, because their major concern is to keep power, and ideally to keep power forever. They're into power, power. In other words, getting reelected over and over and over again. Remember, until 1994, the Democratic Party, for a period of 60 years, was in power. Now, they didn't control, well, most of the time they controlled both the House and the Senate. Occasionally, the Republicans, not occasionally, they would win the presidency. But many of those people that were Republicans, for example, Eisenhower and Nixon, were moderate, and I would say both of them are really progressive, or in using the terminology of that period, they were liberal Republicans. Now, they didn't necessarily come out and say it, but that's what was their policies, and that was their actions. They weren't conservatives. They weren't they certainly weren't libertarians, and they certainly were not conservative. They were big government Republicans. They were progressives. Yes, the Republicans' Democratic Party did differ as to what they wanted to spend, how much, and on what. But other than that, they were both parties were for big government, for growing the size of government and growing the scope of government. And that's what you have to remember and get clear in your head. Because the problem is not just in the Democratic Party. You have the same problem in the Republican Party, because a lot of the leadership are big interventionist government status. In other words, they're progressives. The reason I give that description is a lot of people don't understand or are not aware of the history of the progressive movement in the United States. It's over 110 years old. And we've had progressives in both the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party. And we've had progressive Democratic presidents as well as progressive Republican presidents. And what even makes the picture a little complicated, you will have people running as conservatives, talk like conservatives, but when you see how they walk, if you see how they vote, they're not conservative. For example, one of the key principles or pillars of conservatism is balanced budgets. Did the Republicans balance the budget under President Bush? No, they did not. Now, they can give you reasons why they didn't, but that's not the point. They never balanced the budget, and they ran up massive deficits. Not in the order of magnitude of President Obama, but they still ran up massive deficits. They're not for limited government. They're big interventionist government statist. And I'm talking about George W. Bush, lives in Dallas, retired here. What did he do? He expanded the entitlement program, drugs for people on Medicare, prescription drugs. That's an expansion of the entitlement program. That made government bigger. And the problem, ladies and gentlemen, Medicare is going broke and will be broke in a matter of time. They're running massive deficits. And what that means is we have unfunded liabilities in trillions of dollars. I haven't looked at the trustee report, but it's about $50 or $60 trillion for just Medicare. And then you have Social Security together, and you're going to get ranges of estimates. But if you add up Social Security, Medicare, and Obamacare, the unfunded liabilities are over $100 trillion. Some estimates put it as over $130 trillion. The GDP of the United States this year will be around $17 trillion. You see the problem? And see, that gets back to the Cloward-Piven strategy. They understand that if everyone that's entitled to welfare applies for all the welfare benefits, the welfare system will collapse. There's not enough money there. And we're seeing that in the federal level right now. We will have a total national debt exceeding $18 trillion by the end of this fiscal year that ends September 30th. If you add to that, and let's be real conservative, let's just say, I haven't looked at the trust, the Social Security has an advisory board, and they put out a report, I think rather soon. It might already be out. And so does Medicare as to the status. But I'd say if you add just those two together, it's at least $80 trillion. So we're fast approaching, if you add up the national debt plus the major entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, the debt and the unfunded liabilities exceed $100 trillion. And you have to add to that Obamacare. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States is broke. Unfunded means we don't have the money to fund those benefits. And that is why the Federal Reserve, the central bank, has been buying the debt of the Treasury massively. It's called printing money. I prefer because they don't actually print it. They create it at a keyboard in a database. But they are monetizing the debt. And that inevitably leads to inflation in a matter of due course, a matter of time. And that means the value of your money in your wallet goes down. That's what inflation is. It means a general increase in the price level of all goods and services. That's another way of saying your money is worth less. And who's doing it? The federal government is doing it. Congress is doing it. And it's using the Federal Reserve System, the Central Bank of the United States. Remember, it's created by an act of Congress to do that. It's a hidden tax. And they need to do that because what happens and what did happen as a result of going into the so-called Great Recession that started in December of 2007 and supposedly ended in June of 2009. What happened? Revenues went down significantly, and the deficit ballooned. The first year Obama was in office, it was $1.4 trillion. Now, I've gotten a little bit astray, and I'll bring it back, and I'll probably have to continue next show. What if you add, if you consider these stories, the Veterans Administration, what is the problem there? They don't have enough resources, which means money and people, in computer systems to really service the needs of the veterans. And remember, there are 27 million veterans, and only about 2 million actually use the Veterans Administration. And you have massive backlogs, waiting lists for people trying to get an appointment. In other words, there's not adequate resources there. And that's what you want to do with the Cloward-Piven strategy. You want more and more veterans to overwhelm the Veterans Administration, and that is happening. Now, they've tried to hide that, but they never dealt with the problem. Obama's had 5 years, was aware of the problem, was briefed about the problem by the outgoing administration, yet has really done nothing about it. So that's one of the crises, overwhelming the Veterans Administration. Now we're seeing the overwhelming of the U.S. Border Patrol in having to handle the illegal alien problem, not only children, but adults, as well as the drug problem. So in just two instances, that is the execution of the Cloward-Piven strategy. And I will add more, because what else has happened? More and more people are on food stamps. More and more people are on disability. More and more people are receiving earned income tax credits. You see, what's going on is the moochers are taking it from the producers. They're trying to collapse capitalism by growing government and overwhelming government. That is the aim of the Cloward-Piven strategy, to overload, overwhelm the existing welfare system. And they're succeeding, folks. They're succeeding. They view this crisis, these multiple crises, as succeeding. And remember, President Obama doesn't have to run. He owns it, but he doesn't care. Because that's what he's trying to do. And he's executing very well. Thank you very much. Who's getting hurt? Yes, the American worker's getting hurt, and so is the American people. So are the hardworking people. because they're burdened with taxes. You see, you have a bunch of leftists in the Democratic Party, as well as in the White House, including a president, that are anti-capitalism. They are opposed to the free enterprise market capitalist system. They're trying to grow government. The answer to every problem is either a new government program, a new regulation, or more taxes. And they know by doing that, they will collapse the system. You've been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening.